laid the marks of silence and immobility on the back of her neck. "I'm sorry to interrupt," Sabriel said, standing next to the temporarily frozen form of the headmistress, "but this is an emergency. As you can see, the army is temporarily taking over. I'm assisting Colonel Horries, who is in charge. Now, we need all the girls in the two senior magic classes to come down to the Great Hall, with you, Magistrix Greenwood, please. Everyone else, students, staff, gardeners, everyone, must go to the top floors of the North Tower and barricade yourselves in, till dawn tomorrow." "Why?" demanded Mrs. Pirch, the mathematics mistress. "What's all this about?" "Something has come from the Old Kingdom," Sabriel replied shortly, watching their faces change as she spoke. "We will shortly be attacked by the dead." "So there will be danger to my students?" Miss Greenwood spoke, pushing her way forward between two frightened English teachers. She looked Sabriel in the face, as if in recognition, and then added, "Abhorsen?" "There will be danger to everyone," Sabriel said bleakly. "But without the aid of the Charter Mages here, there isn't even a chance." "Well," replied Miss Greenwood, with some decision, "we'd better get organized, then. I'll go and fetch Sulin and Elimir. I think they're the only two Charter Mages among the prefects. They can organize the others. Mrs. Pirch, you'd better take charge of the, evacuation to the North Tower, as I imagine Mrs. Umbraid will be, deep in thought. And Mrs. Swan, you'd best round up cook and the maids, get some fresh water, food, and candles, too. Mr. Arkler, if you would be so kind as to fetch the swords from the gymnasium." Seeing that all was under control, Sabriel sighed, and quickly walked back outside, past soldiers stringing oil lamps up in the corridor. Despite them, it was still lighter outside, the sky washed red and orange with the last sunlight of the day. Touchstone and the scouts had the sarcophagus down and roped up. It now seemed to glow with its own ugly inner light, the flickering free magic marks floating on the surface like scum or clots in blood. Apart from the scouts pulling the ropes, no one went close to it. Soldiers were everywhere, coiling out barbed wire, filling sandbags from the rose gardens, preparing firing positions on the second floor, tying trip flares. But in all this commotion, there was an empty circle around the glistening coffin of Rogier. Sabriel walked towards Touchstone, feeling the reluctance in her legs, her body revolting at the thought of going any closer to the bloody luminescence of the sarcophagus. It seemed to radiate stronger waves of nausea now that the sun had almost fled. In the twilight, it looked larger, stronger, its magic more forceful and malign. "Pull!" shouted Touchstone, heaving on the ropes with the soldiers. "Pull!" Slowly, the sarcophagus slid across the old paving stones, inching towards the front steps, where other soldiers were hastily hammering a wooden ramp together, fitting it over the steps. Sabriel decided to leave Touchstone to it, and walked a little way down the drive to where she could see out the iron gates. She stood there, watching, her hands nervously running over the handles of the bells. 6 bells now, all probably ineffective against the awful might of Caerigor. And an unfamiliar sword, strange to her touch, even if it was forged by the Wallmaker. The Wallmaker. That reminded her of Mogget. Who knew what he had been, that strange combination of irascible companion to the Abhorsens and blazing free magic construct sworn to kill them. Gone now, swept away by the mournful call of Astaraël. "I left this place knowing almost nothing about the Old Kingdom, and I've come back with not much more," Sabriel thought. "I am the most ignorant Abhorsen in centuries, and perhaps one of the most sorely tried." A clatter of shots interrupted her thoughts, followed by the zing of a rocket arcing up into the sky, its yellow trail reaching down towards the road. More shots followed, a rapid volley, then sudden silence. The rocket burst into a white parachute flare that slowly descended. In its harsh magnesium brilliance, Sabriel saw fog rolling up the road, thick and wet, stretching back into the dark as far as she could see. Chapter 28. Sabriel forced herself to walk back to the main doors rather than break into a screaming run. Lots of soldiers could see her. They were still placing lanterns out in lines, radiating out from the steps, and several soldiers were holding a coil of concertina wire, waiting to bounce it out. They looked anxiously at her as she passed. The sarcophagus was just slipping off the ramp into the corridor ahead of her. Sabriel could easily have pushed past it, but she waited outside, looking out. After a moment she became aware that Horis was standing next to her, his face half lit by the lanterns, half in shadow.
The fog is almost at the gates, she said, too quickly to be calm.
I know, replied Horis steadily. That firing was a picket, 6 men and a corporal. Sabriel nodded. She had felt their deaths, like slight punches in her stomach. Already she was hardening herself not to notice, to willfully dull her senses. There would be many more deaths that night. Suddenly, she felt something that wasn't a death, but things already dead. She stood bolt upright and exclaimed, "Colonel, the sun is truly down, and something's coming, coming ahead of the fog." She drew her sword as she spoke, the colonel's blade flickering out a second later. The wiring party looked around, startled, then bolted for the steps and the corridor. On either side of the door, 2-man teams cocked the heavy tripod-mounted machine guns and laid their swords across the newly made sandbag walls.
"Second floor, stand ready!" Horis shouted, and above her head, Sabriel heard the bolts of 50 rifles working.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw 2 of the scouts step back outside and take up position behind her, arrows nocked, bows ready. She knew they were ready to snatch her inside if it came to that. In the expectant quiet, there were only the usual sounds of the night. Wind in the big trees out past the school wall starting to rise as the sky darkened. Crickets beginning to chirp. Then Sabriel heard it. The massed grinding of dead joints, no longer joined by gristle. The padding of dead feet, bones like hobnails clicking through necrotic flesh.
"Hands," she said nervously. "Hundreds of hands."
Even as she spoke, a solid wall of dead flesh hit the iron gates, throwing them over in a split-second's crash. Then vaguely human forms were everywhere, rushing towards them, dead mouth gulping and hissing in a ghastly parody of a war cry.
"Fire!"
In the instant's delay after this command, Sabriel felt the terrible fear that the guns wouldn't work. Then rifles cracked, and the machine guns beat out a terrible barking roar, red tracer rounds flinging out, ricocheting from the paving in a crazy embroidery of terrible violence. Bullets tore dead flesh, splintered bone, knocked the hands down and over, but still they came, till they were literally torn apart, broken into pieces, hung up on the wire. The firing slowed, but before it could entirely cease, another wave of hands came stumbling, crawling, running through the gateway, slipping, tumbling over the wall, hundreds of them. So densely packed, they crushed the wire and came on, till the last of them were mown down by the guns at the very foot of the front steps. Some, still with a slight vestige of human intelligence, retreated, only to be caught in great gouts of flame from white, phosphorus grenades thrown out from the second floor.
"Sabriel, get inside!"
Horis ordered, as the last of the hands flopped and crawled in crazy circles, till more bullets thudded into them and made them still.
"Yes,"
replied Sabriel, looking out at the carpet of bodies, the flickering fires from the lanterns, and lumps of phosphorus burning like candles in some ghastly charnel house. The stench of cordite was in her nose, through her hair, on her clothes, the machine gun's barrels glowing an evil red to either side of her. The hands were already dead, but even so, this mass destruction made her sicker than any free magic. She went inside, sheathing her sword.
Only then did she remember the bells. Possibly. She could have quelled that vast mob of hands, sent them peaceably back into death without... But it was too late. And what if she had been overmastered? Shadow hands would be next, she knew, and they could not be stopped by physical force, or her bells, unless they came in small numbers, and that was as likely as an early dawn. There were more soldiers in the corridor, but these were mailed and helmed, with large shields and broad-headed spears streaked with silver and the simplest charter marks drawn in chalk and spit. They were smoking and drinking tea from the school's second-best china. Sabriel realized they were there to fight when the guns failed. There was an air of controlled nervousness about them, not bravado exactly, just a strange mixture of competence and cynicism. Whatever it was, it made Sabriel walk casually among them, as if she were in no hurry at all.
"Evening, miss. Good to hear the guns, hey? Practically never work up north." "Won't need us at this rate. Not like the perimeter, is it, ma'am?" "Good luck with the bloke in the metal cigar case, miss."
"Good luck to all of you," replied Sabriel, trying to smile in answer to their grins. Then the firing started again, and she winced, losing the smile. But their attention was off her, focused back outside. They weren't nearly as casual as they pretended, Sabriel thought, as she edged through the side doors leading from the corridor into the great hall. Here the mood was much more frightened. The sarcophagus was up the far end of the hall, resting across the speaker's dais. Everyone else was as far away as possible, up at the other end. The scouts were on one side, also drinking tea. Magistrix Greenwood was talking to Touchstone in the middle, and the 30 or so girls, young women really, were lined up on the opposite wall to the soldiers. It was all rather like a bizarre parody of a school dance. Behind the thick stone walls and shuttered windows of the great hall, the gunfire could almost be mistaken for extremely heavy hail, with grenades for thunderclaps, but not if you knew what it was. Sabriel walked into the centre of the hall and shouted,
"Charter mages, please come here."
They came, the young women quicker than the soldiers, who were showing the weariness of the day's work and proximity to the sarcophagus. Sabriel looked at the students, their faces bright and open, a thin layer of fear laid over excitement at the spice of the unknown. Two of her best school friends, Sulin and Elimir, were among the crowd, but she felt far distant from them now. She probably looked it too, she thought, seeing respect and something like wonder in their eyes. Even the charter marks on their foreheads looked like fragile cosmetic replicas, though she knew they were real. It was so unfair that they had to be caught up in this. Sabriel opened her mouth to speak, and the noise of gunfire suddenly ceased, almost on cue. In the silence, one of the girls giggled nervously. Sabriel, however, suddenly felt many deaths come at once, and a familiar dread touched her spine with cold fingers. Kerrigor was closing in. It was his power that had stilled the guns, not a lessening of the assault. Faintly, she could hear shouts and even screams from outside. They would be fighting with older weapons now. "Quickly," she said, walking towards the sarcophagus as she spoke. "We must make a hand-fast ring around the sarcophagus. Magistrix, if you would place everyone. Lieutenant, please put your men in among the girls." Anywhere else, at any other time, there would have been ribald jokes and giggles about that. Here, with the dead about the building, and the sarcophagus brooding in their midst, it was simply an instruction. Men moved quickly to their places. The young women took their hands purposefully. In a few seconds, the sarcophagus was ringed by charter mages. Linked by touch now, Sabriel didn't need to speak. She could feel everyone in the ring. Touchstone to her right, a familiar and powerful warmth. Miss Greenwood to her left, less powerful, but not without skill, and so on, right around the ring. Slowly, Sabriel brought the charter marks of opening to the forefront of her mind. The marks grew, power flowing round and round the ring, growing in force, till it started to project inwards, like the narrowing vortex of a whirlpool. Golden light began to stream about the sarcophagus, visible streaks rotating clockwise around it, with greater and greater speed. Still, Sabriel kept the power of the charter magic flowing into the center, drawing on everything the charter mages could produce. Soldiers and schoolgirls wavered, and some fell to their knees, but their hands stayed linked, the circle complete. Slowly, the sarcophagus itself began turning on the platform with a hideous shrieking noise, like an enormous unoiled hinge. Steam jetted forth from under its lid, but the golden light whisked it away. Still shrieking, the sarcophagus began to spin faster and faster, till it was a blur of bronze, white steam and yolk-yellow light. Then, with a scream more piercing than any before, it suddenly stopped, the lid flying off, to hurtle over the charter mage's heads, smashing into the floor a good 30 paces away. The charter magic went too, as if earthed by its success, and the ring collapsed, with fewer than half the participants still on their feet. Wavering, her hands still tightly gripped by Touchstone and the Magistrix, Sabriel tottered over to the sarcophagus and looked in.
"Why?" said Miss Greenwood, with a startled glance back up at Touchstone. "He looks just like you."
Before Touchstone could answer, steel clashed outside in the corridor, and the shouting grew louder. Those scouts still standing drew their swords and rushed to the doors, but before they could reach them, other soldiers were pouring in, bloodied, terrified soldiers, who ran to the corners or threw themselves down and sobbed or laughed or shook in silence. Behind this rush came some of the heavily armored soldiery of the corridor. These men still had some semblance of control. Instead of running on, they hurled themselves back against the doors and dropped the bar in place.
"He's inside the main doors!"
one of them shouted back towards Sabriel, his face white with terror. There was no doubt about who he was.
"Quick, the final rites!" Sabriel snapped.
She drew her hands from the other's grasp and held them out over the body, forming the marks for fire, cleansing, and peace in her mind. She didn't look too closely at the body. Rogier did look very much like a sleeping, defenseless Touchstone. She was tired, and there were still free magic protections around the body, but the first mark soon lingered in the air. Touchstone had transferred his hand to her shoulder, pouring power into her. Others of the circle had crept up and linked hands again, and suddenly Sabriel felt a stirring of relief. They were going to make it. Kerrigor's human body would be destroyed, and the greater part of his power with it. Then the whole of the northern wall exploded, bricks cascading out, red dust blowing in like a solid wave, knocking everyone down in blinding, choking ruin. Sabriel lay on the floor, coughing, hands pushing feebly on the floor, knees scrabbling as she tried to get up. There was dust and grit in her eyes, and the lanterns had all gone out. Blind, she felt around her. But there was only the still scalding bronze of the sarcophagus.
"The blood price must be paid,"
said a crackling, inhuman voice. A familiar voice, though not the liquid, ruined tones of Kerrigor, but the terrible speech of the night in Hol Hallow, when the paper wing burned. Blinking furiously, Sabriel crawled away from the sound, around the sarcophagus. It didn't speak again immediately, but she could hear it closing in, the air crackling and buzzing at its passage.
"I must deliver my last burden," the creature said. "Then the bargain is done, and I may turn to retribution."
Sabriel blinked again, tears streaming down her face. Vision slowly came back, a picture woven with tears, and the first rays of moonlight streaming through the shattered wall, a picture blurred with the red dust of pulverized bricks. All Sabriel's senses were screaming inside her. Free magic, the dead, danger all around. The creature that had once been Mogget blazed a little more than 5 yards away. It was squatter than it had appeared previously, but equally misshapen, a lumpy body slowly drifting towards her atop a column of twisting, whirling energies. A soldier suddenly leapt up behind it, driving a sword deep into its back. It hardly noticed, but the man screamed and burst into white flames. Within a second he was consumed, his sword a molten lump of metal, scorching the thick oak planks of the floor.
"I bring you Abhorson's sword," the creature said, dropping a long, dimly seen object to one side, "and the bell called Astarael."
That it laid carefully down, the silver glinting momentarily, before it was lowered into the sea of dust.
"Come forward, Abhorson. It is long since time that we began."
The thing laughed then, a sound like a match igniting, and it started to move around the sarcophagus. Sabriel loosened the ring on her finger and edged away, keeping the sarcophagus between them, her thoughts racing. Kerrigor was very near, but there still might be time to turn this creature back into Mogget and complete the final rites.
"Stop!"
The word was like a foul lick across the face by a reptilian tongue, but there was power behind it. Sabriel stood still, against her own desire, as did the blazing thing. Sabriel tried looking past it, lidding her eyes against the light, trying to puzzle out what was happening at the other end of the hall. Not that she really needed to see. It was Kerrigor. The soldiers who'd barred the door lay dead around him, pale flesh islands about a sea of darkness. He had no shape now, but there were semi-human features in the great ink splash of his presence, eyes of white fire and a yawning mouth that was lined with flickering coals of a red as dark as drying blood.
"Abhorson is mine," croaked Kerrigor, his voice deep and somehow liquid, as if his words came bubbling out like lava mixed with spittle. "You will leave her to me."
The Mogget thing crackled and moved again, white sparks falling like tiny stars in its wake.
"I have waited too long to allow my revenge to be taken by another,"
it hissed, ending on a high-pitched yowl that still had something of the cat. Then it flew at Kerrigor, a shining electric comet hurtling into the darkness of his body, smashing into his shadowy substance like a hammer tenderizing meat. For a moment, no one moved, shocked by the suddenness of the attack. Then Kerrigor's dark shape slowly recongealed, long tendrils of bitter night wrapping around his brilliant attacker, choking and absorbing it with the implacable voracity of an octopus strangling a bright-shelled turtle. Desperately, Sabriel looked around for Touchstone and Magistrix Greenwood. Brick dust was still falling slowly through the moonlit air, like some deadly rust-colored gas, the bodies lying around seemingly victims of its choking poison, but they had been struck by bricks or wooden splinters from the smashing of the pews. Sabriel saw the Magistrix first, lying a little away, curled up on her side. Anyone else might have thought her merely unconscious, but Sabriel knew she was dead, struck by a long stiletto-like splinter from a shattered pew. The iron-hard wood had driven right through her. She knew Touchstone was alive, and there he was, propped up against a pile of broken masonry. His eyes reflected the moonlight. Sabriel walked over to him, stepping between the bodies and the rubble, the patches of freshly spilled blood, and the silent, hopeless wounded. "My leg is broken," Touchstone said, his mouth showing the pain of it. He tilted his head towards the gaping hole in the wall. "Run, Sabriel, while he's busy. Run south. Live a normal life."
"I can't," replied Sabriel softly. "I am the Abhorson. Besides, how could you run with me, you with your broken leg?"
"Sabriel!"
But Sabriel had already turned away. She picked up Astarael, practiced hands keeping it still. But there was no need, for the bell was choked with brick dust, its voice silent. It would not ring true until cleaned. with patience, magic, and steady nerves. Sabriel stared at it for a second, then gently placed it back down on the floor. Her father's sword was only a few paces further away. She picked it up and watched the charter marks flow along the blade. This time, they didn't run through the normal inscription, but said, "The Clare saw me. The Wallmaker made me. The King quenched me. The Ahorsen wields me so that no dead shall walk in life, for this is not their path." "This is not their path," whispered Sabriel. She took up the guard position and looked down the hall to the writhing hulk of darkness that was Kerrigor. Chapter 29. Kerrigor seemed to have finished with the free magic thing that had once been Mogget. His great cloud of darkness was complete again, with no sign of white fire, no dazzling brilliance fighting away within. He was remarkably still, and Sabriel had a moment's brief hope that he was somehow wounded. Then the awful realization came. Kerrigor was digesting, like a glutton after an overly ambitious meal. Sabriel shuddered at the thought, bile tainting her mouth, not that her end was likely to be better. Both she and Touchstone would be taken alive, and kept that way, till they pumped out their life's blood, throats yawning, down in the dark of the reservoir. She shook her head, dispelling that image. There had to be something. Kerrigor had to be weaker, so far from the Old Kingdom, perhaps weakened more than her charter magic. She doubted that a single bell could sway him, but two, in concert? It was dark in the hall, save for the moonlight falling through the shattered wall behind her, and quiet. Even the wounded were slipping away in silence, their cries muted, last wishes whispered. They kept their agony close, as if a scream might attract the wrong attention. There were things worse than death in the hall. Even in darkness, the form of Kerrigor was darker still. Sabriel watched him carefully, undoing the straps that held Saraneth and Kibeth with her left hand. She sensed other dead all around, but none entered the hall. There were still men to fight or feast upon. What went on in the hall was their master's business. The straps came undone. Kerrigor didn't move, his burning eyes closed, his fiery mouth shut. In one quick motion, Sabriel sheathed her sword and drew the bells. Kerrigor did move then. Swiftly, his dark bulk bounding forward, halving the gap between them, he grew taller too, stretching upwards till he almost reached the vaulted ceiling. His eyes opened to full, raging, flaming fury, and he spoke, "Toys, Abhorsen, and too late, much too late." It was not just words he spoke, but power. Free magic power that froze Sabriel's nerves, caught at her muscles. Desperately, she struggled to ring the bells, but her wrists were locked in place. Tantalizingly slowly, Kerrigor glided forward, till he was a mere arm's length away, towering over her like some colossal statue of rough-hewn night, his breath rolling down on her with the stench of a thousand abattoirs. Someone, a girl quietly coughing out her last breath on the floor, touched Sabriel's ankle with a light caress. A small spark of golden charter magic came from that dying touch, slowly swelling into Sabriel's veins, travelling upwards, warming joints, freeing muscles. At last it reached her wrists and hands, and the bells rang out. It was not the clear, true sound it should be, for somehow the bulk of Kerrigor took the sound in and warped it, but it had an effect. Kerrigor slid back and was diminished, till he was little more than twice Sabriel's height. But he was not subject to Sabriel's will. Saraneth had not bound him, and Kibeth had only forced him back. Sabriel rang the bells again, concentrating on the difficult counterpoint between them, forcing all her will into their magic. Kerrigor would fall under her domination. He would walk where she willed, and for a second he did. Not into death, for she lacked the power, but into his original body, inside the broken sarcophagus. Even as the chime of the bells faded, Kerrigor changed. Fiery eyes and mouth ran into each other like molten wax, and his shadow stuff folded into a narrow column of smoke, roaring up into the ceiling. It hovered among the rafters for a moment, then descended with a hideous scream straight into the Rogier body's open mouth. With that scream, Saraneth and Kibeth cracked, shards of silver falling like broken stars, crashing to the earth. Mahogany handles turned to dust, drifting through Sabriel's fingers like smoke. Sabriel stared at her empty hands for a second, still feeling the harsh imprint of bell handles. Then, without any conscious thought, there was a sword hilt in her hand as she advanced upon the sarcophagus. But before she could see into it, Rogier stood up and looked at her, looked with the burning fire-pit eyes of Kerrigor.
"An inconvenience," he said, with a voice that was only marginally more human. "I should have remembered you were a troublesome brat."
Sabriel lunged at him, sword blowing white sparks as it struck, punching through his chest to project out the other side. But Kerrigor only laughed and reached down till he held the blade with both hands, knuckles pallid against the silver-sparking steel. Sabriel tugged at the sword, but it would not come free.
"No sword can harm me," Kerrigor said, with a giggle like a dying man's cough. "Not even one made by the Wallmakers, especially not now, when I have finally assumed the last of their powers. Power that ruled before the Charter, power that made the Wall. I have it now. I have that broken puppet, my half-brother, and I have you, my Abhorsen. Power and blood. Blood for the breaking."
He reached out and pulled the sword further into his chest till the hilt was lodged against his skin. Sabriel tried to let go, but he was too quick, one chill hand clutching her forearm. Irresistibly, Kerrigor drew her towards him.
"Will you sleep, unknowing, till the great stones are ready for your blood?"
whispered Kerrigor, his breath still reeking of carrion.
"Or will you go waking every step of the way?"
Sabriel stared back, meeting his gaze for the first time. Surely, there in the hellfire of his eyes, she could see the faintest spark of blazing white. She unclenched her left fist and felt the silver ring slip down her finger. Was it expanding?
"What would you have, Abhorsen?" continued Kerrigor, his mouth peeling back, skin already breaking at the corners, the spirit within corroding even this magically preserved flesh. "Your lover crawls towards us, a pathetic sight, but I shall have the next kiss."
The ring was hanging in Sabriel's hand, hidden behind her back. It had grown larger, but she could still feel the metal expanding. Kerrigor's blistered lips moved towards hers, and still the ring moved in her hand. His breath was overpowering, reeking of blood, but she had long gone beyond throwing up. She turned her head aside at the last second and felt dry, corpse-like flesh slide across her cheek.
"A sisterly kiss," chuckled Kerrigor. "A kiss for an uncle who has known you since birth, or slightly before, but it is not enough."
Again, his words were not just words. Sabriel felt a force grip her head and move it back to face him, while her mouth was wedged apart, as if in passionate expectation. But her left arm was free. Kerrigor's head bent forward, his face looming larger and larger, then silver flashed between them, and the ring was around his neck. Sabriel felt the compulsion snap off, and she leant back, trying to hurl herself away, but Kerrigor didn't let go of her arm. He seemed surprised, but not anxious. His right hand went up to touch the band, fingernails falling as he did so, bone already pushing through at the fingertips.
"What is this? Some relic of—"
The ring constricted, cutting through the pulpy flesh of his neck, revealing the solid darkness within. That, too, was compressed, forced inwards, pulsating as it tried to escape. Two flaming eyes looked down in disbelief.
"Impossible!" croaked Kerrigor. Snarling, he pushed Sabriel away, throwing her to the floor. In the same motion, he drew the sword from his chest, the blade slowly coming free with a sound like a rasp on hardwood. Swiftly as a snake, arm and sword went out, striking through Sabriel, through armor and flesh, and deep into the wooden floor beyond. Pain exploded, and Sabriel screamed, body convulsing around the blade in one awful reflexive curve. Kerrigor left her there, impaled like a bug in a collection, and advanced upon Touchstone. Sabriel, through eyes fogged with pain, saw Kerrigor look down and rip a long, jagged splinter from one of the pews.
"Rogier," Touchstone said. "Rogier!"
The splinter came down with a strangled shriek of rage. Sabriel closed her eyes and looked away, slipping into a world of her own, a world of pain. She knew she should do something about the blood pouring out of her stomach, but now, with Touchstone dead, she just lay where she was and let it bleed. Then Sabriel realized she hadn't felt Touchstone die. She looked again. The splinter had broken on his armored coat. Kerrigor was reaching out for another splinter, but the silver ring had slipped down to his shoulders now, shredding the flesh away as it fell, like an apple corer punching the dead spirit out of the rotting corpse. Kerrigor struggled and shrieked, but the ring bound his arms. Capering madly, he threw himself from side to side, seeking to cast off the silver band that held him, only causing yet more flesh to fall away, till no flesh remained, nothing but a raging column of darkness, constrained by a silver ring. Then the column collapsed upon itself like a demolished building, to become a mound of rippling shadow, the silver ring shining like a ribbon. A gleaming red eye shone amidst the silver, but that was only the ruby, grown to match the metal. There were charter marks on the ring again, but Sabriel couldn't read them. Her eyes wouldn't focus, and it was too dark. The moonlight seemed to have gone. Still, she knew what must be done. Sareneth. Her hand crept to the bandolier. But the sixth bell wasn't there. Or the seventh. Or the third. Careless of me, thought Sabriel. Careless. But I must complete the binding. Her hand fell on Belgaire for a moment, and almost drew it, but no, that would be release. Finally, she drew Rana, whimpering with the pain of even that small movement. Rana was unusually heavy for so slight a bell. Sabriel rested it against her chest for a moment, gathering strength. Then, lying on her back, transfixed with her own sword, she rang the bell. Rana sounded sweet and felt comforting, like a long-expected bed. The sound echoed through the hall and out to where a few men still battled with the dead. All who heard it ceased their struggles and lay themselves down. The badly wounded, she rang the bell. Rana sounded sweet and felt comforting, like a long-expected bed. The sound echoed through the hall and out to where a few men still battled with the dead. All who heard it ceased their struggles and lay themselves down. The badly wounded slipped easily into death, joining the dead who had followed Kerrigor. Those less hurt fell into a healing sleep. The mound of darkness that had been Kerrigor split into two distinct hemispheres, bounded by an equatorial ring of silver. One hemisphere was as black as coal, the other a gleaming white. Gradually, they melted into two distinct forms, two cats joined at the throat like Siamese twins. Then the silver ring split in two, a ring around each neck, and the cats separated. The rings lost their brilliance, slowly changing colour and texture, till they were red leather bands, each supporting a miniature bell, a miniature runner. Two small cats sat side by side, one black, one white. Both leaned forward, throats moving, and each spat up a silver ring. The cats yawned as the rings rolled towards Sabriel, then curled up and went to sleep. Touchstone watched the rings roll through the dust, silver flashing in the moonlight. They hit Sabriel's side, but she didn't pick them up. Both her hands still clutched Runner, but it was silent, resting below her breasts. Her sword loomed above her, blade and hilt, casting the moon shadow of a cross upon her face. Something from his childhood memory flashed through Touchstone's mind. A voice, a messenger's voice, speaking to his mother.
"Highness, we bring sorrowful tidings. The Abhorsen is dead."
Epilogue. Death seemed colder than ever before, Sabriel thought, and wondered why, till she realized she was still lying down, in the water, being carried along by the current. For a moment she started to struggle, then she relaxed.
"Everyone and everything has a time to die," she whispered.
The living world and its cares seemed far away. Touchstone lived, and that made her glad, inasmuch as she could feel anything. Kerrigor was defeated, imprisoned, if not made truly dead. Her work was done. Soon she would pass beyond the ninth gate and rest forever. Something grabbed her arms and legs, picked her up out of the water, and set her down on her feet.
"This is not your time," said a voice,
a voice echoed by half a hundred others. Sabriel blinked, for there were many shining human shapes around her, hovering above the water, more than she could count. Not dead spirits, but something else, like the mother sending called by the paper boat. Their shapes were vague, but instantly recognizable, for all wore the deep blue with the silver keys. Every one was an Abhorsen.
"Go back," they chorused. "Go back." "I can't," sobbed Sabriel. "I'm dead. I haven't the strength." "You are the last Abhorsen," the voices whispered, the shining shapes closing in. "You cannot pass this way until there is another. You do have the strength within you. Live, Abhorsen, live."
Suddenly she did have the strength, enough to crawl, wade, and fall back up the river, and gingerly edge back into life, her shining escort dropping back at the very last. One of them, perhaps her father, lightly touched her hand in the instant before she left the realm of death behind. Her face swam into view, Touchstone's, staring down at her. Sound hit her ears, distant, raucous bells that seemed out of place, till she realized they were ambulance bells, ambulances racing in from the town. She could sense no dead at all, nor feel any great magic, free or charter. But then Kerrigor was gone, and they were nearly 40 miles from the wall.
"Live, Sabriel, live,"
Touchstone was muttering, holding her icy hands, his own eyes so clouded with tears he hadn't noticed hers opening. Sabriel smiled, then grimaced as the pain came back. She looked from side to side, wondering how long it would take Touchstone to realize. The electric lights had come back on in parts of the hall, and soldiers were placing lanterns out again. There were more survivors than she'd expected, tending to the wounded, propping up dangerous brickwork, even sweeping up the brick dust and grave mold. There were also many dead, and Sabriel sighed as she let her senses roam. Colonel Horrees, killed outside on the steps. Magistrix Greenwood. Her innocent school friend Elimir, 6 other girls, at least half the soldiers. Her eyes wandered to closer regions, to the 2 sleeping cats, the 2 silver rings next to her on the floor.
Sabriel!
Touchstone had finally noticed. Sabriel turned her gaze back to him and lifted her head cautiously. He'd removed her sword, she saw, and several of her school friends had cast a healing spell, good enough for the moment. Typically, Touchstone had done nothing for his own leg.
Sabriel, he said again, you're alive.
Yes, said Sabriel, with some surprise.
I am.
This is Tim Curry. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Sabriel by Garth Nix. This program was produced and directed by Charles Potter. Executive producer, Dan Zitt. Text copyright, 1995 by Garth Nix. Production copyright, 2002 by Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.